Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Okay. Page 92, verses 20 to 25. Krishna arranges the marriage of his sons and daughters. King Purukit said, no? Yeah, I thought he was killing.
94.
Yeah, I thought that. Oh, I didn't move these things. Okay. Lord Balaram slays Rukmi. Better. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. On the joyous occasion of that marriage, O King, Queen Rukmini, Lord Balaram, Lord Krishna, and several of the Lord's sons, headed by Shamba and Pradyumna, went to the city of Bhojakata. After the wedding, a group of arrogant kings headed by the king of Kalinga told Rukmi, "You should defeat Balaram at dice. He is not expert at dice." "O king, but still he's quite addicted to it." Right? You know, because the whole point was is that because of the enmity, then in this way, then on the marriage things there, then he can have the game of dice, and this way then he can insult Balaram, so at least, you know, that he can't do anything too drastic because, you know, it's the marriage of his sister, you know. But and he's only arranged it like this to please his sister. So, but he, it doesn't mean that he can't at the same time, how you say, insult Balaram, right? Yeah. Thus advised, Rukmi challenged Balaram and began a gambling match with him. Footnote 28. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, among Kshatriya kings, gambling on chess was not uncommon. If someone challenged a Kshatriya to play on the chessboard, the Kshatriya could not refuse the challenge because the chessboard is actually set up, it's like a battle. You know, it has all the chaturanga, it has all the elements of battle, and so then it's based on that. So you can play chess without dice or you can play it with dice. You know, how it works with dice, I'm not sure, but the point is that you have these different things. So one is just, you know, a matter of wit. The other is that you have the gambling, that you can use it as a gambling element.
So chess was mainly performed by Kshatriya.
No, everybody would do, but you would see it's for them because it has that battle aspect. Then if they're challenged there, they can't refuse. Yeah. Means if it was some other gambling thing. You know, it's like, hey, which fly do you think is going to fly first? I bet you $10 it's the guy on the left. You know, that they don't have to get involved in that. You know? Right? Because that's for the Aussies, not for the it's not for the Kshatriyas. Deciding that it would be difficult to defeat Krishna at dice, they told Rukmi to invite Balaram to a game of dice, right? Because, you know, he'd rather insult Krishna, but if he insults Balaram, then that will be an insult to Krishna. And so in any case, he gets some harassment of Krishna. In that match, Lord Balaram first accepted a wager of 100 coins, then 1,000, then 10,000. Rukmi won this first round, and the king of Kalinga laughed loudly at Lord Balaram, showing all his teeth. Right, because he's the one that recommended it. Right? He just wants to rub it in. Lord Balaram could not tolerate this. Footnote 29. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that the wages consisted of gold coins. Lord Balaram inwardly became quite angry when he saw the gross offense of the king of Kalinga. Next, Rukmi accepted a bet of 100,000 coins, which Lord Balaram won. But Rukmi tried to cheat, declaring, "I'm the winner," shaking with anger like the ocean on the full moon day. Handsome Lord Balaram. His naturally reddish eyes, even redder in his fury, accepted a wager of 100 million gold coins. Srila Sanatan Goswami comments, "Though endowed with a wealth of patience, Sriman, and though not inclined to agitation, sometimes he becomes agitated. Like the ocean, by nature he had red eyes, but by the agitation the eyes became redder. Or, though having red eyes by nature, agitated by great anger, he moved his brows. Thus he was beautiful, Sriman." Right? Yeah, because you have the aspect of justice, you know, that things are fair and all that. That's supposed to be there. It's an inherent nature of the living entity. So that would be, then it was coming from Krishna. Just like we have some independence, he has unlimited independence. So whatever goes on, whatever the living entity approaches him, that's how he reciprocates. So in this way, he's dealing, they're cheating with him, therefore the natural reciprocation would be that way. But they're expecting him just to go on in a proper way. So that's not proper.
So Maharaj, So the propensity for justice is natural and it's coming from Krishna?
Yes, but you have to. But the point is if you apply it in connection with Krishna, then you get benefit from that. You can elevate yourself. But if you're dealing with justice on the platform of the material concept, then it will only bind you. You know, just like friendship, it's the natural quality of the soul. So compassion is there, but when the compassion is material, you only get material benefit. But if the compassion is being applied in a relationship to Krishna, then you get spiritual benefit. Does that make sense? So it's like anything of Krishna's. It's how you use it. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Lord Balaram fairly won this wager also, but Rukmi again resorted to cheating and declared, 'I have won. Let these witnesses here say what they saw.' Just then a voice from the sky declared, 'Balaram has fairly won this wager. Rukmi is surely lying.'" Footnote 30. "Since the sinful kings would act as witness and tell a lie, a voice spoke from the sky in order to increase Balaram's fury so that he would kill sinful Rukmi." Right? Because otherwise they'll all say, no, Rukmi won. We saw. "Urged on by the wicked kings, Rukmi ignored the divine voice. In fact, destiny itself was urging Rukmi on. And thus he ridiculed Lord Balaram as follows." Right? There's a saying that when it's time for the jackal to die, then he runs into the city. Because if he's out in the forest, you'll leave him alone. But if he comes in the city, then people will deal with the jackal. So in the same way, it's time for him to die, so now he's not using his brain. Rukmi said, "You cowherds who wander about the forest know nothing about dice," right? He won twice, and the wages, Rukmi won the 100 coins and, you know, like that. But he won the, 100,000 coins and 100 million coins. So, you know, who's doing well here? Yeah. "Playing with dice and sporting with arrows are only for kings, not for the likes of you." Srila Jiva Goswami explains, "Rukmi addressed Balaram in the plural, you, to indicate that Balaram was an associate of Krishna. You are ignorant because you are cowherds, of lower birth, who wander in the forest. However, there is a hidden meaning in those words by which he accidentally praises Balaram. You protect, Palaha, the cows, and the earth, go. You are the objects of meditation, go charaha, in solitary forests. But persons like you are not learned in gambling matches at all because persons intoxicated with wealth, Rajanaha, enjoy committing violence to others by arrows and gambling. This is not seen in you or your devotees. We do not know, but your devotees know your actions, which are performed as your independent pastimes." Right? So then whenever these things come up, they speak in their own anger for their own purpose. But we see that Saraswati Devi, because it's in connection with the Supreme, and she's in control of speech, then what they say to them means one thing, but then to the devotees, they can understand the other aspects. Wow. Yes?
So Krishna, he hears both, or Balaram hears both, or does he react to what he said?
Because that's what he intended. The devotees are seeing it that way, because then they'll see always the glories of the Lord. But for the demons, they're dealing in a way like that. But the point is Krishna will reciprocate how you deal with him. So, because they mean it in the negative way, therefore then Krishna, responds in that negative way. Because it's just something spoken. Something that's being done, you see, is that, like Putana, she performs the activities of a nurse. Though her intent was something else, but he took the activities, and so then... So, yeah.
As we saw today morning, all the words. Actually,
all the words.
Imply Brahman. So then you wouldn't find in Bhagavatam also that that is the direct what Rukmini speaks of, right? And then the indirect, the hidden meaning has been given by Acharya. So
yes.
Okay, means that. So does it apply that? This is the same principle applies over here?
Is this the same principle as the Vedanta Sutra? All words go back to Krishna? Yes. But the point is that if it's just seen on that platform only all the time, then how do you operate the Jnana Bala and Kriya energies to do things for Krishna? Because then it only brings out the aspect of the Aishwarya, and it only brings out the aspect that he's God.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the point is for interacting and for rendering service, then if the word can be used in its ordinary sense, then it'll be used because then you can perform activities to serve the Lord. Yeah? Yeah. But it does all ultimately do that. So you can all think about everything and bring everything back to Krishna. Yeah. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Thus insulted by Rukmini and ridiculed by the kings, Lord Balaram was provoked to anger. In the midst of the auspicious wedding assembly, he raised his club and struck Rukmini dead. The king of Kalinga, who had laughed at Lord Balaram and shown his teeth, tried to run away, but the furious Lord quickly seized him on his tenth step and knocked out all his teeth." Right? You know, he could have just smiled, but no, he had to show his teeth. Right? Srila Jiva Goswami explains, "The king of Kalinga fled in fear 10 steps, but Balaram, because of his anger, knocked his teeth out, since the king had laughed, showing his teeth. Quote, this wicked person desires great suffering from me. Why should I not fulfill his desire?" He then fulfilled the king's desire by knocking out his teeth. Right? You don't show your teeth and mock the Supreme Lord unless you want to lose some teeth. So he said, okay, yeah. You know, it's just like if someone steals, they want to be put in jail. Because that's the result of that. You know, so, yeah. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued, "Tormented by Lord Balaram's club, the other kings fled in fear, their arms, thighs, and heads broken, and their bodies drenched in blood. When his brother-in-law Rukmini was slain, Lord Krishna neither applauded nor protested. O king, for he feared jeopardizing his affectionate ties with either Rukmini or Balaram." So if he's just neutral, because if he said it's well done that he should have killed him, then Rukmini will be upset because that's her brother. And if he says, oh, you know, you shouldn't do that, Rukmini, then he'll get up. Balaram will get upset. What do you mean? This guy was misbehaving. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates, "It was proper that Krishna say that it was good that Rukmini die since he was evil, but he did not say that. He also did not say that it was bad killing a brother-in-law was bad, since in saying Rukmini's killing was good, he feared that Rukmini would become angry with him, and his affectionate relationship with Rukmini would be broken or would disappear, bunga. And if he had said killing Rukmini was wrong, Balaram would be angry with him, and his affectionate relationship with Balaram would be broken. Thus, if he did not say anything, the affection would continue." Yes.
Well, this sounds perfect when Krishna is in the center. However, for us, when we deal in, you know, tricky situations, then sometimes following this same pattern, actually we upset both parties.
Yeah, but you have to then see if it means, well, it's also how you do it.
Just keep quiet.
But in keeping quiet, where's the attention?
There's no attention. There's just, you know, being not involved.
But then if you're with the, in this case, he's standing with one party looking at the other party. Mm. But it's not that the energy with the one party goes down or the other one is not reciprocated. It's just that he's neutral in making a comment. So in other words, the energies and that relationships has to be maintained. So he's going on as if the relationships are normal and this situation kind of didn't happen.
Yeah.
But it has to be that one's interactive. You can't just pull back and be non-interactive. Then both parties will be upset. You understand?
Yeah.
So there's the element of interactiveness. Also, you also have to see is that in here, then it was natural because both of these will go on. But if there's a hierarchy in the relationships that you're dealing with, then at that you may have to choose one and, you know, over the other. You know, ideal, you can balance it, but that's the point. The material world's dangerous. I think it's the saying is stuck in between a rock and a hard place. Yeah. So it's just a matter of seeing what's there, what's the specifics, and then trying to balance. What if there's any hierarchy that is there, like that. But in this case, because the companionship with Rukmini and the companionship with Balaram, then you have that element. He doesn't want to jeopardize those two. Does that make sense? If it was some other king and it's Rukmini, then he would have to take Rukmini's side. Just like which side did when it was Bhima or Draupadi, then which side is he showing? No, Draupadi. Oh, excuse me, Bhima. Yes, Bhima. Yes. Yeah, yeah. So that way, then it made him think to work out a solution. So, in other words, if they're both satisfied, then not saying anything is correct. If they're both unsatisfied, that means there's an action you have to do that balances the two. Right? Because in this case, Krishna did nothing, it worked. Right?
Yeah.
But we see with Ashwatthama, then he needed to do something. Right? So Arjuna had to do something to balance the two parties.
But then in that case, it was even more tricky. Because Krishna said one thing, but he actually didn't mean it.
Yeah, but he's trying to bring it out that you have to work. In other words, there is a time for silence and there's a time for action. And you can't get the two mixed up.
Sometimes it is time to leave. As Balaram left Kurukshetra, for example. Yes?
Yes, Balaram left. He didn't take part in the battle. So, because that way then he's not... In that way he's supporting and not supporting either side. Like that. You know, so you just have to see what works. So that means the intelligence always has to be applied. So there is no easy solution. Or banga can mean crookedness, the appearance of anger in affection. Or banga can mean a wave. Krishna feared that Rukmi and Balaram would waver in their affection for him. How could I say the opposite to each of them? Therefore, he was silent out of shame, bhayat. Or he remained silent since Rukmini would immediately become angry at Balaram on realizing that Krishna approved the killing. Like, because she'll avoid becoming angry at Krishna, but she'll get angry at Balaram. That way then, you know, it's like, it's just how it works, right? He feared the relationship between Rukmini and Balaram would be broken. In approving the killing, he feared criticism from Rukmini's family and the public, and humiliation of Rukmini. Rukmi was a brother-in-law, Shale. Krishna was able... was able to take away, Harihi, the breaking of affection. He could create joy because of his skill. Previously, when Krishna disfigured Rukmi, he spoke... slightly harsh words. She spoke slightly harsh words to Krishna. What would she say to him now when Rukmi was killed by Balaram? You know, just when he's, you know, shaving off his mustache and this and that, you know, having some fun. Right? So if he's getting in trouble for that, then what'll be? Sugadev addresses Parikit with excitement. O king. Right, so that's the thing, is he balances these things. Because we see for Krishna, it's about the relationship. Because if it was about what was easy, there'd be an easier solution, wouldn't it? You know? Because here it's everybody's there and everything like that. It would have been some other kind of thing that you can't complain about. But the point is it happened in this way so that Krishna has to exercise that effort to make the relationships work. Because for Krishna, it's about the interaction, the effort put into the relationship. That's the whole thing that attracts his attention. And so when that's done with affection, so here we see it was all about affection. Maintaining the affection between himself and Rukmini, himself and Balaram, and between Rukmini and Balaram. So then, therefore, he was acting in that way. So relationships is the whole thing. Does that make sense? So that's why then duties are then in line with trying to perform your duty properly so that everything goes nice. Does that make sense? So that's why in the Varnashram system, then everybody's engaged according to their particular nature. When in that nature, then you see that everything's right. So that's why someone should be in a situation that's right for them. Because if they're in the wrong situation, even you put in the endeavor, it won't work. Right, because the value system is different, what's expected is different, the methods are different. So that's why the commonality. Means, of course, you bring it as close as possible, then you have to fill in the rest. You know, that's the idea. But the point is that effort is that effort in the basis of relationships, that's what one's working for. Does that make sense? Yes.
From previous discussion about anxieties, this kind of situation, you know, for Krishna is no anxiety, but for us,
he may experience anxiety, but the point is it's fun for him because it's in connection with relationship.
Yeah, but for us it's no fun. It's like,
because we want to be the controller. He's not trying to be the controller.
Well, he is a controller.
He is, but he has to make the effort here. So he's just asking us to do the same thing. He makes the effort, we should make the effort. You know, so that's the difficulty, is we want to get no anxiety means no effort, not putting in the effort and solving the problem. You know, because for Krishna it's not, yes, it means you can take out that thing of the controller that he can make it work, but there's no pride. So this is a matter of the feelings that are there. Like you said here, is that it could mean he was also feeling fear in the bhayat. Could be about him, or it could mean the fear between that the relationship will be broken between Rukmini and Balaram instead of just himself and Balaram or Rukmini. So, you know, different flavors, different experiences are there. So all these aspects then are... So when we have attachment, then the anxiety that's there is very great. When we don't have attachment, then the anxiety that comes up is actually not a difficult thing because it's in connection with Krishna. So it's just a matter, is the anxiety connected to Krishna or not? Or it may be partially connected and partially not connected. So the part that's not connected, that's the part that's giving us the trouble. Otherwise, we see the devotees are quite willing to go to so much trouble for Krishna, and they don't consider it trouble, as shown by Kunti Devi. You know, it's all that trouble, then it just made them think about Krishna.
Wasn't it that Krishna was coming personally?
But even just the thinking about him, well, he may have come personally. But the point is it's the thinking about him that was the aspect, that they would always remember him. That's why he would come. But she's saying now that everything's worked out nicely, then the tendency is they may not, she's worried they won't think of Krishna. Right? Because the anxieties made them think of Krishna, because there was no other shelter. But if the things are materially going nice, the tendency will be to get involved in that, and you may forget. Srila Sukadeva Goswami concluded, then the descendants of Dasarha, headed by Lord Balaram, seated Aniruddha and his bride on a fine chariot and set off from Bhojakata for Dwarka. Having taken shelter of Lord Madhusudana, they had fulfilled all their purposes. Right? So, all their purposes. So, you know, they got Aniruddha married, they had the connection like this, they you know, that Rukmini was pleased and all that. Now Balaram is also very pleased, and you know, so everything worked out. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur concludes, with all their desires fulfilled, they put Aniruddha on a chariot with his new bride and departed for Dwarka. This includes Rukmini. It should be understood that though Rukmini had been killed, Rukmini was also satisfied within, right? Because he was behaving badly. Her affection for Rukmini was only external, so you have to be careful in the external dealing. He says something, then you bring up the external. But if you don't say anything, then it's just the internal and that it worked. The statement in verse 39 that Krishna was silent, fearing breaking his affectionate ties to Balaram Rukmini, is based only upon her external affection for Rukmini, right? Not about the internal. So, yes.
This is also a question that devotees very often ask. It's about their relatives who are not devotees.
So they want to know if they can hit him over the head with a club.
Stretching that far.
Oh, okay.
But the external and internal affection.
Yes. External, you show the external as whatever is appropriate. But internal, you don't have to necessarily have any. Yeah. It's a drama anyway, so it's like just how good an actor are. You know, do you want an Oscar, or do you want the Razzie Award? Yeah, so, yeah. So make it look good.
Need to have some intelligence.
Yes, that's why it's called Buddhi Yoga. The whole idea of Bhagavad Gita is you have the intelligence, how you can apply this. Because it's all about intelligence. That's the difficulty in the modern kind of approach, that it's all about sentiment. They think the sentiment's going to solve it. No, it's the intelligence that's going to solve it. Yeah. So they can say, no, but before it was the intelligence is so cold and not personal and all this, but the sentiment is also cold and not personal. It just depends where you apply it. Mm. Right. If you're the victim, then it's all nice and, you know, warm and fuzzy. But if you're not the victim, then it's all cold and not nice. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing, is that, and depending upon whether someone's liked or not, then they'll put them in that political context or not, to be favorable or not. Oh, they're trying. You know, then you see him in a favorable light, or, oh, so this is what you mean by, and then they'll put you in the unfavorable light. Mm-hmm. Yes, and so it's the same thing. It's just that you make it look like it's not this. That's why it's political correctness. It's politically how you make it look. So it's not about relationships. So that's the thing, is Buddhi Yoga is about using your intelligence in relationship between yourself, other living entities, the material energy, and Krishna. So you have to use your intelligence, because spiritual sentiment is developing. Material sentiment we may be quite good at, but the spiritual sentiment is developing. So therefore we have to use our intelligence, that we put ourselves in the correct situation in which the maximum amount of the spiritual understanding and sentiment can develop. Because otherwise, if it's just on the material, then it's not. So the point is, you can say, no, but we want real relationships. And since when is on why do you want real relationships? For what? Mm-hmm. For yourself. So it's not actually about anyone else. You want real relationships means everybody deals with you, real. But any situation, if you're there with them and how they dealt, if you say, did you really mean that or did you mean this? And, well, you know, it's this, you know, like that. So what happened to the real? So they want everyone to deal real with them, though they'll deal politically with everybody else. So it's not there. The difference is do you follow the Vedic authority on that decision and standards, or is it just a matter of your own mind and senses and how you like things to run? And so that's why then you've chosen this particular way of dealing. So that's the whole difficulty, is that it's just a matter of piety. Do we accept authority or not? Right? because it's not that you accept the Vedic version, you have a problem with authority. No, you accept the Vedic version means you don't have a problem with authority. Because that is authority. Shabda is authority. You know? And if you have problem with the Vedic, means generally you have problem with the principle of authority. You may accept something here and there, but it's more as an individual. You accept the individual, you don't accept the position. Like that. You know, so it's just a matter of purity of heart. So by chanting, then all the good qualities come, so then naturally all these things happen. It's just, you know, there may be a slight lag between the two.
Time.
Yes, time. Conclusion. The relationships with his devotees are the most important for Krishna. Being affectionate to his devotees, Krishna made each queen think that she is his favorite. Although the queens were most attractive, he was not controlled by lust, but by their pure love, prema maya. Right? So it's the relationship itself and that expression that's there. It's not the medium of the expression. It's what's being expressed, so that affection. But that affection is there. He'll reciprocate the affection, but the medium you use to express it in is where he will reciprocate. You know what I'm saying? It's not that you cook nicely for Krishna and then your car doesn't get a flat tire. You know, it's not you cook nicely for Krishna and then one's abilities in that, one's absorption, one's satisfaction are within that area. Does that make sense? You know, or it's with the deity, so then it's reciprocated there. So it's just a matter of where you put that affection. He reciprocates through that same medium. So even the queens will deal in the conjugal relationship using the conjugal forms, but it's the affection that they have for him that he appreciates. But because it's applied through the conjugal form, he'll reciprocate in the conjugal form. Right? So we have to see is that it's the pure love, the prema maya, not the kama maya, that was attracting Krishna.
Yes.
Right?
And it is constant.
And it's constant. That's the point. He's always constant. That's why he's the supreme male, because he's always constant. When Balaram killed Rukmi, Lord Krishna was silent because he did not want to disturb his affectionate relationship with neither Balaram nor Rukmini. Thus the Lord again showed that the relationships with his devotees are the most important consideration for him. So we see very nicely here is that this is what's important to him. Details are there, the stories then bring out so much nice aspects, but this is the actual core point, is that the relationships between Krishna and the devotees and devotees, this is the most important to Krishna.
And Maharaj, it is supposed to be also devotee supposed to have to put in focus on the relationship with Krishna.
Yes. It's always about Krishna, but it's in relationship to Krishna. Or it's just like, why do brothers and sisters, are they nice with each other? Because they have the common father, like that. So the thing is devotees have that relationship with each other because of the common point of being devotees. Like that. And then as one matures, one even sees all living entities as devotees. But, as like in Krishna, how they deal, what medium they use, that's how you reciprocate. Right? So someone's being clever, like we see with Prabhupada. Someone's being clever, Prabhupada will be clever back. You know, someone's being very pleasant, he'll be pleasant back. It's like that. It depends on the medium used, that will be the field that is taken. You know, it's just, but it's not that a gentleman can't do it nicely. You know, it's just like, let's say there was that television show where there's this host and he's famous. He was famous for bringing people on the show and completely ripping them to shreds. You know, somehow or another, people appreciate that. You know? And so he was quite famous. So he brought Prabhupada on the show and he figured that, you know, because he always talks against the Western culture and that he's going to bring up something like that or about, you know, the relationships or the, you know, the whole thing, just the American way of life. And so his point was to rip him to shreds, right? So then he asked the first question to Prabhupada basically about something about the young people and what does he think of this, you know, Western culture or something? Because he expects him to go into it and then he's going to go. And he says, well, all these nice young boys and girls are coming, and because they're nice, that means then there must be nice training by their parents. You know? So like that, and so this nice friend, then they're able to appreciate this God consciousness. The guy didn't know what to do because his whole premise was going to be on arguing over the Western culture, but, you know, he thought he'd get, you know, an hour's worth out of that. You know, and that was before there were so many ads, so, you know. So it was, you know, that would have been 55 minutes worth of, you know, argument. So then, but Prabhupada had done the same thing back because he asked a question, you know, that was supposed to destroy the opponent. Prabhupada asked the same question that destroyed the opponent, but he did it very pleasantly. You know, so he didn't even know what to do. You know? Yeah. So. Yes, yes. So that's what you see, yes. Maturity. So Krishna is the most mature, and then the devotees, as they advance, then they have that, and so then they can apply. So at least we know about it. Whether we can do it's another thing, but at least we know about it. Yes?
Here we see there's no condition involved. It's Krishna, his brother, his internal potency, and it's all wonderful. And then for us, we have established relationship with somebody, say, with the senior devotee. And there's a conditioning. It's their conditioning, and it's annoying us. So the relationship is there. It's very fixed. We wanna keep it. Mm. But then this conditioning, we don't know how to deal with that part.
You don't.
But we can avoid it. It's right there.
It's right there. But what are the aspects in the relationship that work? What are the activities that work? Just focus on those things. Like if you have a friend that if you bring up politics that it turns ugly, then talk about the weather or talk about lunch or, you know, other things that they like to do. So you just keep in those areas. You just don't go near. And you know what words create what paths. And when those start coming up, you start using ones that take it off somewhere else. So then the relationship is maintained, and you avoid areas that are going to be uncomfortable. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just so we see is that Krishna is doing like that because it's the same principle that's going on. It's just that Krishna is in those positions because that's where he likes to be. But how he deals with the relationships is the method. We're in the various positions we're in due to karma. So it has nothing to do with the soul other than their material desire. But it's still, those situations and relations are the things that we use to interact in relationship. But, you know, you have, let's say in this case, a brother and a wife. But the point is it's not, Krishna has, because that's the nature. We have him because that's our condition, you know, the condition from that. But it's still how we deal with husband, how we deal with wife, you know, how we deal with brothers or friends. The dynamic is still the same. Krishna does it, acts within these because it pleases him. We act within those in the proper way because it pleases Krishna. So it's indirect. Krishna's direct, with us it's indirect. But as soon as we connect it, it has the benefit of the direct. But in other words, indirect is only gives benefit when it's connected. Direct always gives benefit. Just the more you're connected, the better the benefit. Right? You know, you're chanting Hare Krishna, you're connected, you're getting benefit. Now if you pay attention and avoid the effect, then you get more benefit. Does that make sense? Like that. Yeah. Okay. Chapter 62, the meeting of Usha and Aniruddha. So his last one was Aniruddha, right? Now again Aniruddha. Okay. It's quite busy. So Pradyumna and Aniruddha are quite... Pratigya. The devotees utilize their powers only for Krishna. Chapter 62 summarizes questions and answers. Chutraleka asks Usha question 1033 of Srimad Bhagavatam from 10.62.13. Who are you searching for, O fine-browed one? What is this hankering you're feeling? Until now, O princess, I haven't seen any man take your hand in marriage. Usha addresses the question in verses 14 to 15. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter recounts the meaning of Aniruddha and Usha, and also Aniruddha's battle with Banasura. Okay, now we're getting it. Of the 100 sons of King Bali, the oldest was Banasura. He was a great devotee of Lord Shiva, who favored Bana so much that even demigods like Indra would serve him. Banasura once satisfied Shiva by playing musical instruments with his 1,000 hands while Shiva danced his Tandava Nritya. It's not bad. Now that's a one-man man. Right? In response, Shiva offered Bana whatever benediction he chose, and Bana asked Shiva to become the guardian of his city. One day when Bana was feeling an urge to do battle, he told Lord Shiva, "Except for you, in the whole world, there is no warrior strong enough to fight me. Therefore, these 1,000 arms you've given me are merely a heavy burden." Angered by these words, Lord Shiva replied, "Your pride will be crushed in battle when you meet my equal. Indeed, your chariot flag will fall to the ground, broken." Because he's saying that, oh, you've given me this benediction, but it's a waste because there's no one to fight with, meaning that, you know, you should fight with Shiva or something. So then, you know, he wants that, he gets it, but, you know, then now they get snarky, you know, so. Yeah. Banasura's daughter, Usha, once had an encounter with a lover in her sleep. Several nights in a row this occurred, until one night she failed to see him in her dreams. She suddenly awoke, speaking aloud to him in a state of agitation. But when she noticed her maidservants around her, she felt embarrassed. Usha's companion, Chitraleka, asked her who she had been addressing, and Usha told her everything. Hearing of Usha's dream lover, the dream lover, yeah. Chitraleka tried to relieve her friend's distress by drawing pictures of Gandharvas and other celestial personalities, as well as various men of the Vrishni dynasty. Chitraleka asked Usha to pick out the man she had seen in her dreams, and Usha pointed to the picture of Aniruddha. Chitraleka, who had mystic powers, knew at once that the young man her friend had pointed out was Lord Krishna's grandson, Aniruddha. Then, using her mystic powers, Chitraleka flew through the sky to Dwarka, found Aniruddha and brought him back with her to Shonitapura, Banasura's capital. There, she presented him to Usha. Having obtained the man of her desires, Usha began serving him very affectionately within her private quarters, which were supposed to be strictly off-limits to men. After some time, the female guards of the inner palace noticed symptoms of sexual activity on Usha's person, and they went to Banasura to inform him. Greatly disturbed, Banasura rushed to his daughter's apartments with many armed guards and, to his great surprise, saw Aniruddha there. As the guards attacked him, Aniruddha took up his club and succeeded in killing a few before the powerful Banasura could capture him with his mystic Nagapasha ropes, filling Usha with lamentation. Shloka Anusharana. Summary of verses. Verses 1 to 9. Banasura's sinful mission. Krishna-conscious persons utilize everything for the service of the Lord. The non-Krishna-conscious persons utilize everything for sense gratification. And Banasura is a perfect example of such a person, right? So that is his mission, right? So in other words, to enjoy, you know, that's the point. You know, he's not worried about tomorrow. So not to eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. No, he's just utilize everything for sense gratification. Verses 10 to 24. Chitraleka unites Usha with Aniruddha, right? Because we've seen before how everything's connected to Krishna. Banasura, everything's not connected to Krishna, but to himself, right? So we could say, the perfection of your materialistic consciousness. You know, it's just he is able to see everything connected to himself, you know, while the perfection of Krishna consciousness see everything connected to Krishna. Verses 10 to 24, Chitraleka unites Usha with Aniruddha. Usha worshipped Aniruddha as if he were the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By her excellent service, she made him forget all other things and was able to draw his attention and love to her without deviation. So, we see here, this is how the Vedic system works. Relationships it always has this balance. There's this, the material concept is, if I'm in control, there's no service. But you see, how does she get control? By serving. Right? How does the husband maintain control? By being controlled. Right? Because the point is you're subservient to that person you can control. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is how this balance works. The modern concepts, they bring it up. They'll say it's Vedic. Oh, the wife has to serve the husband and he doesn't care. That's not Vedic. Like that. You know, it's not from around here. I think you have to go a little farther west between here and Europe. Mm-hmm. Kind of hit a place like that. So, you know, so it's not Vedic. Vedic is this proper balance. Like that. So that's the whole difficulty, is that these things will bring up these dynamics of the, you know, the machissimo and the, you know, the liberated position and all that, and it just creates havoc. Because the Vedic principle is about service. The living entity serves, but from their position and capacity, because that naturally is the nature of the individual. Within that, it works. So that's the whole point, is that for the man it's obvious, for the woman it's not. Means her control is not obvious, though she has. His control is obvious, though he's subservient. You know, or he makes it obvious that he's subservient. She doesn't make it obvious. You understand? It's just the nature. Because if one is, you know, how you say, overt, the other has to be covert to balance. You know, but this idea is you bring it all to where they're the same, then what's the difference? You know, there's no variety. You know, it's just like you're sitting down there at the fancy restaurant, and then let's say they bring you, you know, how you say, a salad. Okay? And a nice bowl is on the other thing, and the different things that are there. Now then they take that away, and then now they use a soup bowl. And when you put it down and they give you the big round spoon, but when you look inside, there's salad. You know, and then, okay, you pick it that. Then they come and take that away, and now they bring on the bigger plate and all that, and all the forks and knives and all that, but spread out. Now it is salad. So what's the point? You know, it's the variety.
Right? Different salad.
Yes. What's the difference? Oh, we put salt on this one. This one we only put lemon. That one we put just olive oil. And that one we put neither. So, bon appetit. Right? Yes. So the whole idea is that it's the difference that makes things nice. The variety. So that's the point, is that in the Vedic, then the difference between positions and relationships and all that, that's what's glorified. That's what makes it, it shouldn't all be the same. There's a difference between how the mother acts, the father acts, how husband and wife acts, parents and children act, you know, all these different things, friends, all these. So the difference is what's the glory. Right? Because in that, then, you can then act within this capacity. You taste it fully. Otherwise, if it's all the same, then not a whole lot of taste.
Right? So the husband is
He's controlling by doing the activities he's supposed to, his duties, like that. But at the same time, as in applying the activities, then to the wife, it's according to what works for her, in her mentality, in this particular, you know, specific nanosecond, like that. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's then how he controls, because someone who will make that effort to do that, then that's pleasing. Someone can think, oh, one's controlled, you got to show her who's boss and all this and that kind of thing. That's why they're all down at the pub describing that instead of being at home. Otherwise, they would just go straight from home to work. They wouldn't stop at the pub. They stop at the pub because it's not working. And then they're going to give you advice how to make it not work. You know? Yeah. So in other words, that's why in the Vedic system you didn't have pubs, because the relationships work. It's only as relationships break down, then the need for the pubs came up. Right? You know, yeah. Like that. Yeah.
and the shopping was always there?
Yeah, shopping was always there, but a lot of times you could just bring the shop to your place. Like Prabhupada was mentioning how you do rings, you buy the jewel. You don't give the jewel to the jeweler. You have the jewel. They come, measure it and everything. They go to their place, make it, then they come to your house, fit the jewel in and then finish it. Set it, you know, do the final polishing and all that. You always hold on to the jewel. They're a goldsmith. They work with gold, not your jewel. Right? You know, so, you know, shopping comes to your place. And also I've heard, if you go around, it means the guys who would make the saris and stuff, they just put them on the shoulder and go through the street. You call them in. They do a whole shop right on your living room floor. Like that, you know. Same, the fruit guys, the subject guys, everybody's going by. I don't see it as much now. Yeah, a little bit, but even like 10 years ago, you'd see them all come with their carts coming through and all the different things. And they generally have better stuff than, you know, in the shops. Because they're the ones that get it direct, you know. So before it was like that. It means you could also go out, but the shop would come to you. So it doesn't get better than that. You know, you don't even have to get out of your chair. You just point, yeah, there. Huh? But yeah, online, yeah, I can do that. So. There's only one problem.
No.
Is that the other one, you can sit there very comfortably. The other one, you have to like be hunched over the computer. And if you spill your pina colada, it's really bad for the keyboard. Okay. Like that.
You are not guaranteed to get quality.
Yeah, that's another thing. You don't know what you're going to get. But yeah. But yeah, it's a similar kind of experience. That's why people like it. You know? Yeah, because you just sit there at home and do everything.
Virtue.
Virtue, yeah. Yeah, what to do until it shows up. Yeah. Okay. But, so we see here is that the principles are how things work, not the knowledge and details. Mm-hmm. Right? Means it, you can add that to this, but knowledge and detail have to be connected with these points. So if it's not in line with this, if we're taking this, no, why does she have to serve this, that? It doesn't matter how much knowledge and detail you bring out. Books and books and books. Wheelbarrows full of books. None of it will work. It just won't work. You can say it's working because, yeah, from my perspective, I'm happy. Whether the other person's happy is another thing. But. So that doesn't make sense. So that's the whole point, is that these are the central things. Then from that, then you work out all the knowledge and detail. So if anything is in line with that, okay, you're reading a book that here says and is showing this aspect, then they'll give some detail how that works, and then it's fine. Right? But then if it's not, you don't worry about that. Does that make sense? Because for us, you know, like the Vedanta Sutra says, if it doesn't, the word doesn't apply to the situation, you have to take it back to Vishnu. So, yeah. Okay. Verses 25 to 33. Banasura captures Aniruddha. In the Vedic culture, an unmarried girl having association with a male is the greatest disgrace to the family. 25 to 26. Banasura was able to capture Aniruddha, the super soul of the Jivas, whose expansion is the lord of Sweta Dweep, only because of the lord's Leela Shakti. Right? How do you catch super soul? You know, it's not going to happen. But he does it because of the Leela Shakti, because then there's, you know, the whole thing is that Krishna Bala, everyone will come, it'll be, you know, it'll be something fun for you know, how you say? Fun for everyone. You know, it's a whole family program, you know, it's like that. Verses 1 to 19. Banasura's final sinful mission. King Parikit said, the best of the Yadus married Banasura's daughter, Usha. And as a result, a great fearsome battle occurred between Lord Hari and Lord Sankarsana. Please explain everything about this incident, O most powerful of mystics. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, right? Because so many of these things are common knowledge. And that, but they want to hear details, how it was like this angle. How is it that these two come to fight, or a particular angle that's there, or like Vidura is acting Maitreya. He knows about creation, but he wants to know about creation where every step of the way is seen in connection to Krishna, rather than just Krishna starts the process and then we see it all unfold down to the, you know, until Earth manifests. But how he's involved at every step. Right? Sukadeva Goswami said, Bana was the oldest of the 100 sons fathered by the great saint Bali Maharaj, who gave the whole earth in charity to Lord Hari when he appeared as Vamanadeva. Banasura, born from Bali's semen, became a great devotee of Lord Shiva. His behavior was always respectable, and he was generous, intelligent, truthful, and firm in his vows. Right? Because the point is, the sons are sons. But just if you're wondering what kind of sons, then it mentioned from his own semen, so that means then he is that kind of son. I think that's called aurasa, means that one's own direct son. Then there's another 11 ways that someone can be a son, like that. So then we know this, you know, this must mean this way. The beautiful city of Sonitapura was under his dominion. Okay. He was respectful, generous, intelligent, truthful, and firm in his vows. Right? So became fixed in that, then if he applies that to materialism, he'll do great. Because these are the qualities necessary for Krishna consciousness. So whatever qualities, whatever activities are important for Krishna consciousness, if you do those activities in Krishna consciousness, then you get you move forward in devotional service. You'll eventually get to the platform of prema. But the same activities being done not for Krishna will give you all material benefit, since these are the activities of devotional service. Does that make sense? So a materialist simply means one who uses activities of devotional service not for devotional service. Right? And then the more pious and qualified, the more they have more of those qualities. Right? So it sounds like Bali Maharaj had so much of these qualities that when he surrendered, then he was immediately such a great devotee and such he could behave in such a nice way because he already had all these qualities. But before that, he wasn't using them in devotional service. So here, Banasura is using these qualities, but he's only using them to worship Lord Shiva and get his own benefit. Right? Because they're tools. They themselves, but you're generous, intelligent, truthful, firm in your vows. You know, would say, oh, no, that would be perfect. If people were like that, the world would be so wonderful. No, the Banasura was doing like that. The world wasn't so wonderful. Yes, materially it may be nice, but materially nice won't satisfy the soul. So it's not enough. You can do that, but the acharyas are trying to save us time. Because if you want to go through this, have all those material facilities, you will have to take a few births. Right, because in Kali Yuga it's not really happening. So you have to end up in Satya, Treta, Dwapara. You know, you just see all these things nicely. So if you want to stick around just because you like these qualities, great. You can do that. But if you want to go back to Godhead, where they use the same qualities, but all for Krishna, then that's better. So we have to get over this idea that the material world will become perfect. Oh, if everybody was like this, then the movement would be so nice. It says, yes, but the movement is the movement because the devotional service. And it would only be so nice because they're devotees. It's about Krishna. Because otherwise, karmis use these to get their work done. They don't have necessarily very deep relationships. You understand? Like that. That's the whole problem. The beautiful city of Sonitapura was under his dominion. Because Lord Shiva had favored him, the demigods waited on Banasura like menial servants. Once, when Shiva was dancing his Tandava Nritya, Bana especially satisfied the Lord by playing a musical accompaniment with his 1,000 arms. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. Lord Shiva is well known as Asutosha, very easily pleased. And he is also very affectionate to his devotees. He is a great protector for persons who take shelter of him and is the master of all living entities in this material world. Right? Because he's master of them because everything is based here on false ego. He's the lord of false ego. So therefore, he's the master of all living entities. Yes. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.